You know, I was just playing my Game Boy, and my sister wanted to just snatch it away from me. It was my birthday present. It was only a few days old, that few days that I got it. So we were just quarreling, you know, I was snatching the Game Boy, she was snatching the Game Boy. My father came out from the bathroom, he heard us quarreling, he took the Game Boy, smashed it on the ground.
When my mom was not happy with me because we had some argument, I can't really remember exactly, but I just remember that she was like, she was not happy with me doing something that I wasn't supposed to do. And then the whole matter was actually a small one, but it blew up. I don't know how it blew up, but I remember she took the hanger from the cupboard and she started to chase after me.
That's WeHo and Oliver Samuel Lo for you. And this is Listen, Learn, Leverage, the podcast focusing on and sharing the human side of some of the best coaches and practitioners in the industry. And I am Ankur Bhattacharji, or Fractal Biomechanics, as you know me, and I welcome you all to this podcast. Hey, Sam. Hey, we. Welcome to Listen, Learn, Leverage. How are you guys doing?
Thank you. All good, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
All good?
Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, guys, before we start the podcast, I would love you to introduce yourself to the listeners who do not know you yet, starting with Sam.
Hey everybody. My name is Sam, and I think you know me by the word Sam Prehab lah. So, I'm a trainer and also like a manual therapist. So I do both hands-on and also a lot of exercise-based training and movement prep and whatever you call it. And that's me what I do lah.
We.
Hi guys, I'm WeHo. So I've been a trainer for 8 years. I'm also a health coach as well. So over time, over the last few years, I realized there's a need for me to also inculcate some health coaching into my own training clients. And that's the reason why I embarked onto this journey as well.
Perfect. So you guys work in a gym in Singapore. You guys work together.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Best trainers of Singapore. So starting with we, how did you end up becoming a personal trainer? How did life take you there?
It was like a opportunity that was granted to me. Not granted. Okay. So, you know, Singapore, all the guys will need to go through this thing called the National Service of 2 years. So by the time I finished, I wasn't really sure what to do. And just happened, my friend's wife, who was working in a gym as an operation person, said, you know, there's some vacancies for floor trainers. So asked me why not I try this. So it was like 8 years ago. And since then, you know, I've been trainers in there.
Nice. So it's all started with you being informed that there's a vacancy and then you joined. So were you thinking of something else to be done in life?
I was pretty much into basketball for my growing up age when I was growing up. So I was thinking about, and I have background in diploma in sports and wellness. I was really thinking about among physical education teacher, basketball coach, or a trainer. So, I mean, I wasn't really saving much up during national service. So, you know, the job that came first was that trainer job. So I took it.
Awesome. Awesome. No looking back since then. And Sam, how did life bring you here?
There was many different things, but ultimately it started when I was just finishing school, right? So there was like I happened to come across like a not a scholarship, but rather like a bond thing that you can do, and then you will be like supported and paid to embark on this career opportunity. So I happen to see something to do with fitness and training, and I decided to go up for it because I think similar to like WeHo's case, right? Maybe all before that, we were embarked on national service. That's when I had a little bit more interest into exercising, movement, and stuff like that. So when I was given the opportunity and I saw it and I took it, I was like, it's what I wanted since national service. So I went on, and then that's where it took me here. Yeah.
So how many years of experience do you have
in this industry? I think it's coming to the 6 or 7 year. Six. Yeah. It's quite a bit. Yeah. Still a newbie though.
If you're a newbie, who am I?
No, we'll always be newbie because, you know, we're always open to
correct,
learning.
Correct. Yeah. We will never know enough of the human body. For sure.
Always learning. Always learning.
Always.
Yeah.
Always, man. Always.
Yeah.
Personal training. Or strength and conditioning coach or anything related to the human body. So not doctor or something like that, medical professional, but something related to the human body, personal trainer, coach, something. You know, in the Asian culture, parents do not see that tag as something they want their kids to become. They're like always, okay, medical professional, doctor, a lawyer, a chartered accountant, or you understand, like those professions. The parents always look up to that. How was this scene at your home with your parents, and how supportive were they of your career choice? So starting with Sam.
Parents was actually, it's a little bit different from the Asian culture here, whereby usually they'll be very strict. Okay, you have to do like what you just said, aim for the best, right? But my parents was actually more supportive in whatever I do. Even though if I didn't do very well, they'll still say, oh, good job, Sam. Just try harder the next time. So I think I was quite blessed that I wasn't really pressured. I was given an opportunity of like, you can choose what you want to do, right? So very thankful that they didn't really force me down a lane. I may not end up doing this again. And then I'm able to just do what I like. And at that point of time, I was actually looking towards more fitness and training and movement, right? So very thankful that I was able to do that. Yeah, so they were very supportive. My family was supportive of whatever I do. And they didn't look down on the job. They instead see it as an opportunity to grow, actually. Because we get a lot of interaction with everyone, I mean, different individuals, right? A different walk of life. I think that's also a blessing in disguise, whereby there'll be opportunities down the road that you never know.
Exactly.
Which I came across with so many. Yeah.
And do they never mention anything like, I wish you were here, you were doing that, you were doing this. They don't mention anything like that, right? They're very happy and satisfied with what you're doing.
They're very happy that I got something that I like to do. And ultimately, at the end of the day, right, you can choose the best job, best pay. But if you don't have the passion and the drive, right, you wouldn't really last either. Yes. Or you'll be a slave to the job instead, and then you won't feel happy. And then all the little stuff happens down the road, right? And people feel so stressed, and then blah, blah, there's a lot of stuff. So I'm quite blessed, lah. Yeah.
Correct. And we, what's the scene with your family, with your home?
I think mine is kind of similar to Sam. Just that I think both my parents were kind of worried. You know, they said, you know, how long can I last in this job? You know, it's physically draining. And how long do I see myself doing this for? While they didn't really say, you know, you shouldn't do this job, they are kind of, you know, there are better options for me. You know, but the thing is about me is the more you try to persuade me, the more I will go down this route. But of course, over the years, they see my interest and passion I'm still interested and very passionate about what I do. Mm. And, you know, they also can see the amount of effort I put into upgrading myself, getting to learn more. Over time, they start to realize that, okay, yeah, this is where I really want to be headed to. They only can give their support. But of course, once in a while, they are still just worried about me. One thing, but last time, this is one thing that I didn't recognize it. I thought that they looked down on this job. But actually, when I look back, it's actually they are more kind of more worried for me. Yeah.
What I have realized as well is that they won't look down. They're not actually looking down. Actually, they see those like doctor and MBA and lawyer and chartered accountant, those professions as safer, much safer.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that is why they're like, should you go there? But when they see like you are becoming successful, you're earning, people are respecting you, you're making a name for yourself in the industry, I think that is the game changer. Then they understand, this field as well, you can do things. You just need that one person to make the change, to change the opinions of everyone.
Yeah. And I think it also goes back to back then when they are young at our age.
Yeah, exactly.
They have no choice but to choose the safer options.
Yes.
But the thing is, they also sometimes they fail to recognize that times has already changed. People at our age at this point in time can also pursue our own passion and still thrive in our own ways. Yeah. So the thing is, they still, I wouldn't say they impose their beliefs onto us. They are just probably they realize that this change has already happened.
Yes.
Yeah, over the years.
They have little to no idea how the world has rapidly changed. The world is now on your fingertips and they have no idea. But now slowly they're realizing that. Yeah. Now they're realizing that when they see me, who were you talking to? So I say, okay, so this is Sam and we from Singapore. Like, Singapore? Like, instantly you're connecting? Like, my grandfather, my mom, they used to say, like, if you had to connect a call, like, 30, 40 years back in India, from India, you had to wait for a long time when every, like, the call to connect, you had to wait for a long time for every connection to be established and then the person will reach and then he will call you. They cannot imagine, they cannot handle it. Like Singapore, within a second, call is set up. You're talking to someone in Singapore. They cannot handle. But then slowly they're understanding as well.
Times change.
For sure. Like the next 2-3 decades will be drastic regarding changes. Only, what I feel is that only people with skills which are rare or valuable will survive. And that is why I feel the direction we are headed to is good for us, because we are doing something which people really need, are in need. So there is a demand in the market. So
for sure.
Yeah.
And even like online coaching, right? You also can do it just like that from your home, right? Even in the pandemic period, you still can do it and you still help people, right?
Yes.
Sometimes change. Sometimes really change.
Exactly. You know what happens in Asian culture or even worldwide, I think so, that the parents, especially the father, is always the last person to know what's going on in the son's life, especially emotional life, or even sometimes it's professional, like no direct talks, no one-on-one talks, no discussion, nothing. So it is the Asian culture. I think so. It's the same in Singapore, probably. But you'll have to tell me. So starting with V, tell me how the situation is, like how your equation with your parents is, especially father.
I think it's really like what you just said is sometimes my father will be the last one to know what exactly happened. Yeah. And even sometimes not even the last, because he probably won't even know. How should I put it? It's like what you just also mentioned is my father won't be the one who say, you know, he loves you.
Exactly.
Yeah, he won't come and you know hug you. But I do vividly remember there's only a couple of times whereby I say I love him. Because you know, in my family we are not being brought up to say these three words, I love you, so easily, you know. And I think it becomes a habit within my family. So having to say I love him, it takes a lot of courage. You know, at some point of time, you know, the words get stuck. the first few times when I tried. But it gets easier and easier. But of course, the number of times that I say that I love you to him is probably become, can be counted with five fingers. And how many times he said he loves me can also be, I think it should be lesser than lesser times than me. But I realize also he does it through actions.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does it through actions. The way he cares is care for the family is very different from how my mom does. Women are normally somewhat probably the ones who express a lot. You know, ask me, you know, how do I feel, all this. Whereas my dad will be asking me, you know, what have I eaten? You know, what do you do in school? Kind of stuff. You know, very, very little do we talk about emotions. That's what I think is, that's why he's probably the last or the, probably the last one to know everything about me.
Sam?
I think it's quite similar. Similar, but to the point that we do still have like a discussion sometimes, like how we move things forward. Maybe not so much like the emotional aspect, but I think maybe a little bit more than what we both said. We have like a weekly talk, like what is going on in life, what we're gonna do, what's your next step. Very, very briefly, but like once a week kind of thing. I think just for us Asians, right, the guys especially, or just fathers, right, we don't really articulate with words or speak with words, but we just do more of the action. So they do love you, they do love us a lot, but maybe they just do more of actions like, oh, they help you get the stuff that you're supposed to be doing, help you get it done. I still can remember back vividly in the early days, my dad would like wake us up early, send us to school, pick us back, something like that. Yeah, so I think it's just more of an action kind of thing in Asian culture, right? Yeah. But when it comes out of words, the mouth suddenly just closes. Zip up. Even for myself also, it's like we call it in Singapore, paise, very shy. It could be a bad thing, but I think at the end of the day, we still mean it, but we just, the expressive side of things for us, right, is a little bit different from the other cultures, I think. Yeah.
Yes. That's something even I feel so. The thing is, you guys have weekly conversations. That's a big deal. Like, you told me you have weekly conversations with your dad where he asks what's happening.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen with me. We said he has said I love you to him. Like, you can count it on fingers. Number of times it has happened with me is zero. So I'm probably even behind in this scene.
So later today you will say one time, okay?
Yes. But it's a good challenge for us.
Yeah.
That we as fathers have to change this equation from the next generation.
Yeah.
We have to do that. Because time is changing. The relationship equation should not remain the same. They are doing this. Why? Because they have seen the same happen to them while they were kids. Mm. And that is why this is a kind of a tradition that's repeating itself, history repeating itself. Somewhere, one generation has to stand up, change the things. That has to be us.
Yeah. It starts somewhere, yeah?
Yeah. Coming to interesting incidents. Western people, I don't know how much they know about this or how much they've experienced this, but getting beaten up by parents is a very Asian thing. So, of course, it doesn't happen now. We have crossed that age, but it's a thing. So, if you guys remember, starting with you remember getting beaten up, why the fun? Like, when you look back now, it's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it was like terror. Like, you're going to get hit. If you remember some funny incidents from your childhood, teenage.
But the interesting thing right now is kids right nowadays, they are smart enough to call for help. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, there's two camps, you know. When I ask...
Before you begin, kids today, we used to go play outside. We used to do a lot of mischievous things. Today, they have a gadget and they're stuck in their home on their bed or on their chair. Yeah. So what mischievous activity are they going to do to get beaten up?
Maybe. Go ahead, V.
Okay. So, I mean, there's two camps right now. Is the camp whereby they believe in beating the kids, not beating up the kids, but beating for learning purposes. The other camp is no beating, just reasoning. You know, I believe my dad is more towards the beating me up kind of camp. His background is he was a commando in army. Yeah, so he's very regimental. You know, he loves rules and regiments. Yeah, so growing up in that kind of family, he's pretty strict with me. He's pretty strict. I wouldn't say he won't allow any mistakes, but I think if it's something you do with... Okay, one incident whereby I remembered very clearly up till now is I was gifted a Game Boy Color at that age. Game Boy Color just came out. You know, I was just playing my Game Boy, and my sister wanted to just snatch it away from me. It was my birthday present.
Yeah.
I mean, it was only a few days old, few days that I got it. So we were just quarreling, you know, I was snatching the Game Boy, she was snatching the Game Boy. My father came out from the bathroom, he heard us quarreling, he took the Game Boy, smashed it on the ground.
Oh my God.
Anything that creates division in the family, crushed. Yeah,
not only that, we got punished. So both me and my sister got punished. Now, back then when I still remember, I have to kneel down on both knees, okay? And, you know, or get cane on my legs. Either or both. Yeah, it was to the point whereby once he finished caning, I still continued to kneel down for many hours. You know, the imagine after a few hours, you know, you want to get up, but you have no strength to get up, kind of thing. When I want to go and go to the toilet and pee, my legs were trembling. I couldn't even control my legs, that kind. Once I finish, come back and kneel down again. Continue kneeling. When I think back, it has no logic. He has no reason. He has no logic when he will stop. But I would still say it kind of made me resilient. Resilient when it comes to my national service, because the kind of mental torture and they punish you without logic. I kind of gotten used to it, kind of gotten numb to it.
Do you think so? You get punished, fine, but if there's no end to it, you don't know where to end it.
Yeah, I wouldn't know
it goes on without any logic and reason. Do you think it creates some kind of soreness in the relationship of the father and son?
Yeah, definitely. And that's the reason why I for a period of time, I don't really like him. You know, for a good many years, I would say a good almost 10 years, during when I was 14 to when I was army, I don't really address him when I come home. It was always... I'm very, very cold towards him. Whenever he starts to speak, I'll start to walk away. Like the kind of relationship. Oh. Yeah, I don't even want to listen to him. Don't even want to hear his voice. That kind. Yeah. And normally, my mom is the one who hold me up after and say, talk to my dad, hey, it's enough. And then she'll hold me up. And she will be the one that is, you know, try to make everything stop. But the thing is, he did stop hitting me around age 14. But it was also that period onwards that I stopped talking to him. Because there's so many things that happened that contribute to that cold treatment with him. But again, when I think back, he's just a first-time parent. He's just a first-time parent to me, first-time parent to my sister, even though, you know, is a second, my sister is a second child. He's still a first time parent to my sister. So overall, I start to, you know, forgive him, forgive myself for giving all this cold treatment. We talk a bit, but, you know, still some sort of irritation, you know, when he
trauma.
Talk certain topics. Yeah, but I'm kind of getting better, trying to get better with him also.
Yeah. This it's a very interesting point that you bring up. Sometimes what happens is when you do not draw that line, he actually brought his work mentality into his family. Never bring your work to your home. That's like a rule in life. Never bring your work to home. So when that happens, I mean, there can be issues. Like now, as you've seen, I can totally understand me. I mean, it happens. It will take time to heal for you to forgive. Probably when you become a parent, probably then you will forgive. So when your heart becomes bigger.
I mean, I've started to forgive him, just that I can't forgive totally. And that's the reason why I address him. I talk to him a bit. I ask him, you know, how is he, kind of stuff, but not as frequent as I want to. But the thing is, the normal addressing him, I will do it when I come home and I see him. Yeah, I'll still do that. Just that, if I want to talk to my dad, like how Sam and his dad talk, probably it'll take a while more.
You have forgiven, but you have not forgotten. Sam, coming to you, your equation with family parents.
There's so many, actually. Okay, so maybe something different than the dad, So I think like we all say, there's two camps, right? So
yes,
in the past, when I was younger, my parents also believe you need to taste the cane, taste the beating in order to learn your lesson, right? And so there was many times, I was also quite naughty last time, So what happened was that I think the only time that I can remember was the one that was quite a big one is that when my mom was not happy with me because we had some argument. I can't really remember exactly, but I just remember that she was she was not happy with me doing something that I wasn't supposed to do. And then the whole matter was actually a small one, but it blew up. I don't know how it blew up, but I remember she was she took the hanger on the cupboard and she started to chase after me. so I can remember at the end of it, the hanger got the indentation of my leg there. That's all I can remember about at the time. So but ever since then, right, how do I say that sometimes when I have a chat with my mom or some argument, right, I tend to want to stop before it happens again. Because I can always remember the past that what happened then, right? Yeah. So sometimes when you have pain inflicted to you, right, especially when it's like a lot, right, sometimes it's hard to forget. You can forgive, like what Weho said, like you can forgive, but you probably will remember parts of it. And then I think it's a very subconsciously, you will just put it in the back seat that, okay, this is going to be happening. I will just stop chatting with you or stop talking so that it will not blow up, for example, like that. So I did have a similar thing like what you had, but it's actually more my mom than my dad. So I tend to, like, when we have conversations, like, it wouldn't last more than 10 minutes. It'd be like 10 minutes, I'll just stop. Because I think in the back of my head, I would think, okay, I better stop in case the same episode happened again. I don't want that to happen. Yeah, so like...
When your conscious mind knows that at this age, it won't happen, but still you go back in...
Yeah. It's still back in my mind. Automatically, I was just like, okay, that's it. I have to go back to do my stuff. We chat later. But I do try to like talk longer and stuff like that. But it's sometimes it just pulls the handbrake up, and then it just, But of course, I'm always trying a bit longer each time. And so I think it's maybe you can say it's like a healing process. You forgive, but the forgetting part is tough, but as long as you try to make improvements every day, I think that's the way to go forward. Yeah, so I think that's maybe the Asian culture sometimes. But I think nowadays also, like, because of, I don't know what laws they have, but nowadays that in Asia, even in Singapore, right, you cannot really hit the kid. They will actually complain or something like that. If I'm not wrong, I heard it from the, what you call that, the kindergarten or the young kid school,
yeah,
right? Like
yeah,
those in nursery and those around those 4 or 5 age, right? Yeah. The teachers cannot even hit them anymore.
They have no to problem. Yeah,
you cannot. You can't even score them. If you score them, you cannot report it, really.
Yeah.
No kidding. Now things have changed also. It really changed really this time around.
Yeah. No physical punishment in schools. No. That it has slowly become a rule here as well. Yeah. But for home, it's there's still not rule.
Yeah.
No
yeah.
rule for parents. Yeah. That's there.
Right.
That's a very interesting topic that you have touched upon, Sam. Because you won't believe, last night I was watching a video of an Indian script writer in movies. So what he was saying is that understanding is the worst thing that can happen in a relationship. And he said, "Did I shock you?" Everyone was like, "Yeah, why is he saying so?" So he said, "A relationship only lasts on the feeling of love, not understanding." Okay, please explain why. So he said, understanding is, suppose I am here of a different community, religion. He's stating his real life example. And here's my wife of a different religion and community. We are together. We live together. We are happily married. There are four or five things about me which she doesn't like. And it can bring up a huge argument. There are four or five things which I don't like about her, which can bring up a huge argument. But it's the love underneath that which keeps us together. If you are in a relationship where you measure your talk to an extent where things do not blow up or there's no fight created, that does not equate to the arrival of love. You're just avoiding fight. Avoiding fight and sorting out issues are very different. Avoiding fight, both sides or one side avoiding fight, does not mean the arrival of love.
Mm-hmm.
Sorting out issues is the arrival of love, because two human beings will never be the same. So that was like, he said, the understanding of not having a fight is not the arrival of love. It's the worst thing that can happen in a relationship. That relationship does not exist. It should not exist. If your relationship has reached to a point where you're avoiding fight, either talk one-on-one or it is kind of a gone case.
I quite agree. You know, underlying, I would think that most people would think that love is a feeling, or love is an action. And you show love, acts of love, even though there may be differences between two parties, but you still choose to act things out of love. Yeah,
I think love is sacrifice. Yeah, I mean, suppose you have someone constantly in your house 24/7. You are sacrificing your privacy, but it doesn't bother you. Why? Because your privacy now comes a bit lower than your feeling for that person. So what are you willing to sacrifice which won't bother you? That's what I think. How much are you willing to give up? So this. Yes, I'm going to give up for this person, because that person, being with that person, means so much to me, more than having this. On the lines of what we have talked right now, how much do relationships mean to you guys, and how much have your respective partners been influential in shaping you, the person or the coach that you are today? So what's their role? What's their influence? Starting with Sam. And Sam, recently you got married, right? Congratulations.
Yeah, you can consider it as married, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, now it's time to open up and let her know that, okay, I have talked about you in this podcast as well. So share it with her as well.
I also do hear this.
Yes. Go on.
Yeah, so... influential in wherever I am today, yeah? That was the question, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so because, how do I put it? Whatever I do, right, towards my journey and my career here, she's always very supportive of whatever I do. Even though there was times there was like, it's not going very well or it's very slow. Hmm. She still had faith in whatever I'm doing that it's going to work. And she just give her constant support. Her name is Amanda. If not, I'm going to say this, she is going to be very weird. So Amanda always tells me like, I think you can do this based on whatever I'm seeing you doing. You're like shining in that dark area. And then you're going to bring your talent or your uniqueness to the industry that she don't see it on. Like when she goes to the commercial gym that she goes and train, or she goes to see somebody with her friends for exercising and stuff like that. So she don't see that unique trait or unique qualities that most people don't tend to have it in the commercial arena. Yeah, so she always tells me, okay, just go for it. Even though, even sometimes when I have to I want to do a course and stuff like that, right? She doesn't really think about, okay, it's going to cost you money, so you better, maybe you don't do this course, save the money for our future or something like that. But she tell me that if you think it's valuable for you and you think it can help you, just go for it. Yeah, so I think that's one of the drivers that makes me want to just keep upgrading myself.
Yeah.
Because I know that she always have my back behind, knowing that she'll give me a slap on my butt and say, okay, just go for it. Because I think she knows whatever I'm doing is going to help so many more people, right? And also maybe become a better person, not to other people, but maybe to her as well. Oh, definitely to her as well. Yeah, so I think without her, I may not be doing what I'm doing. I might be slacking behind, and I don't have that additional push from behind. I think for some of the website stuff I'm putting, she did tell me, just go for it. Just do it. Just try out. So I think that's the thing, is that she's open to those ideas and just try things out. And she's the one that's always pushing me from behind to just go for it. Yeah, so I think that's what shaped me to become whatever I am today. We need to take the step ahead. Even though it's all black, right? I can't see what's going forward. Just take a step ahead. You never know what opportunities will lie in front of you. Be it good or bad, you still learn. So I'd rather make the mistake than not trying and then just falling down the path of the normal route that people will just follow, right? And then end up, maybe you find, so not what I want to do, the passion's not there, then I'll just end up sidetracking and maybe just staying in a normal office job, right? So that's where I am now. Yeah,
so many people have good paying jobs, but they feel stuck. Why? Because now they have to be in the job to pay their EMIs, their loans, their salaries. So that is why they're stuck. They cannot make that jump, that shift to other domains which they like, because now it's too late. Now they have to pay EMIs, otherwise the bank will come after them.
so they are slave to their job already. It's not the other way around, right?
Yeah.
So eventually you, I think all of us wants to be independently financially and also driven in the career that we want to do, passion, right?
Yeah.
That's why we are all the Asian coaches here,
Best in Singapore, best in India.
Yeah, man. Yeah. We're all here. All the best.
Tell about your story.
Okay, so her name is Joey. We have been together for more than 7 years. Even though she's younger than me, but for a good first few years, she actually has more foresight and she's more mature than me. What I really learned from her was that, and what I learned from her and how it applies to in my career and how into being a better coach, is she really taught me how to be authentic, be real, be genuine, to not just people, but to ourselves as well. It's not easy to express your own feelings, but she did a very great job in expressing her own and sometimes asking, and not sometimes, but most of the time asking, how do I feel? Which is a required trait of a coach, right? So a coach is not someone who tells you what to do, but someone who guides you as when you face the challenge and guide you around the challenge or go through the challenge together with you. So you as the client, still the driver of the seat. And she taught me that unknowingly. While I was the one going for courses, reading books, she gifted in a sense whereby she didn't realize she has this gift. Yeah. She was telling me, you know, how her clients, okay, she's a client facing role, client success manager, but all these years while she's in her field, she realized that a lot of clients actually do really like her personality. And she don't know why. I said, this is the gift. Right? You don't have to learn it and you're already gifted and talented in that. You make people feel very comfortable with you. And she taught me that being genuine is more important than trying to be perfect, trying to say the best script, say the best lines to the clients. Yes. So I think this is one thing that I really learned from her. And she also was the one who somehow got me to talk to my dad as well. She said family is very important, right? Don't I want to be, you know, on my wedding day, you know, be able to, you know, thank them for all the sacrifices that they made, or you know, when they grow old, don't you want to be there for them? You know, why wait until, you know, when I'm a dad to really go and realize actually why they are doing all this? Yeah, so she actually has been a huge role in not just in this relationship and an influencer to how I shape the way I communicate with my clients as well. So yeah.
So we, as we had discussed, there was a point in your life where you had thought of quitting this industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you could talk more about this and how you came back, how you took the U-turn, came back to the industry again.
Yeah. So when I wanted to quit at a point of time, I didn't know what it takes to be a coach. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought, you know, people are paying me. They come here. They come to me for weight loss, to build muscle, whatever goals they want to. And they pay you a huge sum of money. But why are they not doing the things I'm getting them to do? Why am I, at a point of time, I was feeling frustrated. Why the clients pay me the money, but they are not disciplined enough?
Mm.
And my frustration caused them to be frustrated indirectly.
Mm.
Then I realized that I took all the responsibility and autonomy from them. And that's the reason why I at the point of time wanted to quit, because it's too much, so overwhelming that that when I realized, actually, I don't have to be so overwhelmed. I don't have to be so burned out. I don't have to be so frustrated. When the client takes back all the responsibility from me, they are the one need to be driving the car, not me. I'm just the one being the guide. Mm. Only then that I realized that, oh, okay, my role isn't to be the hero in their journey.
Yes.
Right, they are the hero.
You're just a facilitator.
I'm just a facilitator. Just like whatever they chose to do, okay, I'll be there for them. And this quote really resonated with me. I think people, this quote is, people don't resist change. They resist being changed.
Hmm.
When I changed my approach in coaching, hmm. meaning they have a say, they have a part to play in deciding what options they have moving forward. What's the smallest step they can take moving forward? When they have the option, when they have the autonomy, their responsibility, I realize I'm much more relaxed. And they actually, even though they may not be able to achieve what they just said, but at least they are moving towards that because they are taking ownership. Yeah, so when I realized everything, I realized I have a newfound of passion in coaching again, or in training people again. Yeah.
You found the human touch. No matter how much technical stuff you know, unless you can connect.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, because I took ACE, ACE CPT, and actually the first one that is required is rapport building. I didn't know what do they put there. No, only then, after 4 years of taking it, then I realized the importance of it.
Hmm.
I took Precision Nutrition Level 1. A lot of people will think that the first half of the book is very important. One of my friends, he said, actually the second part of the book, when they talk about building rapport, building connection, that's the most important part of the book. I didn't realize it until 4 to 5 years later.
Hmm.
Because you can see all the information that you want. Without connection, the client won't do anything. Without ownership, without connection, without autonomy, they won't do anything. They will look at you. So what do I do next? They will wait to be spoon-fed. And that's when trouble comes in.
Sam, if you could elaborate on the learnings that you have had from your clients, like the human touch or something massive that you have learned over the years that is not technical, but is as important as the technical.
So I think it'll be how we communicate with them or how can we bring it through to them. Like, hey, for example, using a scenario whereby a client comes in for training, has a certain goal to reach and stuff like that, right? So when we talk about their goals, right, for example, like say they want to do this, do that, they want to achieve this. Okay, so we understand their goal, but the thing is that how can we as the coach or the trainer be able to drive the message that they need to do this in order to reach a goal without actually them knowing, like what you just said, the technical part of stuff, like, okay, you need to eat this, you need that. But rather, maybe, how can we give them a direction, right? Or the way that we speak, that we can actually touch them from the inside, in the sense that we can just talk about how you're communicating with them in the sense of like what they do on a daily basis, right? How can they actually change their small little stuff they do without actually saying the big stuff. So for example, okay, you have to burn 500 calories. Okay, maybe what you can do is that every day after you finish you're doing your chores, you just go and try to take some time off and do a little bit of walking and stuff like that. Or even simpler, they can ask them to do is just that, okay, instead of taking the bus, instead of taking the cab, you take the bus today so that you actually will move a little bit more than usual.
Hmm.
So I think at the end of the day, it's like not telling them, okay, you need to lose 500 calories from me. And however you do it, just lose the 500 calories from me. But rather that, how can we actually simplify things for them without actually them thinking at all? So that's what I learned by communicating with the clients, is that we don't have to actually say you need to do this. We can actually just hide the little secrets inside there and just say, okay, maybe instead of taking the train today, taking the cab today, just take the public transport today. And then you achieve the goal for them that they don't even know they're achieving. So they don't find it so stressful that, okay, I need to hit this 500 calories anymore. So that's what I learned along the way for like communication, right? And then maybe also that if you think of a client that comes in with like dealing with a bit more pain issues, right? We have to actually tell them that maybe don't think about the pain so much. Okay, rather maybe think about how you feel today and comparative to other days, right? If you feel that, hey, I feel a little bit more, I feel there's less discomfort, I can move a bit better, that'll be a good indicator that, okay, you're moving forward in the right direction. Instead of just thinking about, my pain must be like that, it has to be lesser.
Mm.
Maybe focus on like the movement aspect of things instead. Yeah, so I think communicating that how we do that is going to influence them and influence me as well. Like, how can I actually improve myself talking to the next client or the people around me? Yeah.
For sure. Like, I will tell you an incident. We cousins recently had a get together. We all were together for the festive season in India. Festive season, eating and everything, like, you know, the get-togethers, lunches and dinners outside and all this stuff, eating at each other's places. There's a cousin of mine who is borderline obese. I would say obese. She's obese. she is doing intermittent fasting, keto, because of course she's not well educated enough in this field, and she just thinks that, like, okay, this is the magic trick probably for me to get thin. She does it. On one side, she does it very dedicatedly. First half of the day, second half of the day, she's like one sweet after the other. So she's taking in sweets, eating a lot of food. That, at that moment of time, she totally forgets, like, she has a routine to follow or something. What we were doing is I was checking my weight on the weighing machine. I checked mine. So there were cousins who were around me and like, okay, let's check as well. So like, how much has it increased or decreased during festive season? So they were all curious. Let's see. We all checked, like, okay. The cousin was sitting there. So she didn't come. So one of my cousins asked her, like, come and check. She said, no, I won't come because it gives me mental pressure. I don't want to check my weight. I know I'm obese, but I don't want to check the number because the exact number would give me even more, like, data. You know, there is something, but if you get the data, it hurts even more. So she didn't check. And some of the cousins were like laughing, like, please come and check. Like, don't be this way. It's okay. They were kind of taking it in a light way. But as a coach, I was thinking, what is the reason? What could be the reason? What are the battles, inner battles that she is fighting? 5 years ago, if I was not a coach, I would have also told her, come here, what are you doing, man? Just check it in a fun way. But today, I think about it twice. Like, what is creating that mental barrier here? What is stopping her from stepping on that? She even does not step on it while being alone. So this is the relationship of her with the weighing scale. As a coach, like, when you see real life scenarios and like telling this person to walk more or lift and eat well is not the best advice. Like, oh, everyone knows that. I'm not the first one, like, in the universe to tell her, wow, amazing thing. Walk more, lift more. Wow, what an amazing advice. No one told me that. Nah, everyone knows that. But it's the details of connecting with that person which will make that weight loss. Anyone can follow a caloric deficit diet. What's the big deal? Sticking to it or having a good nutrition plan, walking, lifting, having aerobic fitness, that is a different thing. When that motivation becomes habit.
You know, one thing that I pick up from that story is you were curious about what's going on. Yeah, you didn't jump right into the conclusion that, you know, she must be scared of. You didn't just jump into the conclusion and just straight away fill out the blanks for her. But instead, you were curious about what happened to her. What were her inner struggles? So when you come from a point of curiosity, that makes you space for her.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, which is I think one of the most important thing a coach can do. Yeah.
Yes. Even if the client doesn't do a breathing drill or a lift or homework, it's time to think, like, okay, how well should I connect with that person? Like, okay, I understand. First session, you are watching someone staring at your screen and staring at that person breathing. You're looking at that person's ribs and pelvis. It might make someone uncomfortable. So relationship gets built up over the period of time. And then, like, what are the things that are stopping you? What are the things that you find comfortable doing it? And then building up on that strength and a little on the weakness side, like, improve your weakness.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that relationship is, like, the first and foremost thing which I've learned.
Yeah.
Especially, like, Sam and pain people, it can be hard at times.
Yeah.
Especially chronic, where their entire mindset about their body has changed. Like, my body is going to break now. I'm fragile. I'm weak. I will collapse now. My life is useless. When these things start entering the mind, it gets hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it becomes their belief, right? Yeah, and then we have to try to facilitate how can we disarm them and give them more trust to their own body.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's just proving to them that their body is actually more than that. They are more than that.
Yeah.
Right. True.
So I was just adding it. And then you also have to like let them know that we have to celebrate our bodies, that we're actually facing the pain or the restrictions to stop us from becoming more than that, right? So actually, instead of like condemning the body, hey, why you are like that, giving me so much pain, actually, more often than not, you should actually celebrate instead. That's the first step. Acknowledge that it's a good thing actually that happened. Then from there, how can we work it to make it even better, right?
We were talking about family and near and dear ones. The question that I have right now is, I think it's everywhere. I've talked to a lot of coaches. It's not Asian, it's universal. You are not valued enough at your home. So whatever skill you have, you're not valued enough. It is there, like taken for granted, and strangers from various parts of the country or world are going to pay for your service. But people who are near and dear ones to you, like your aunt or your parents or your cousins, they're having issue, they don't approach you. Like, what do you think causes this? You guys have your own stories, which I know I want you guys to share it with the listeners, like these stories, starting with Sam.
Okay. So to start off with first is that I think ever since because of how things are in Singapore or Asia, as a trainer, right, a lot of us will try to find a solution ourselves rather than trying to find someone. And then especially so if it's your own family member, right, usually they take things for granted lah. So they will usually not touch the family member. Like example, me, right, I'm a trainer, for example, they will not ask you first, they will actually ask people outside first.
Yes.
Okay. So it could be one of few things. Maybe one is that they feel that is I don't want to trouble him lah. He could be very busy. Or they also could expect that, okay, probably if I ask him, it's going to be free, right? So I'd rather not ask him at all in case I have to incur a cost. And then usually when you think of like family members for our society here, is that you should be giving free lah, because my family member mah, so you should give me free. So I think that's one of the things that stops them from like asking. Mm. And that's what I think behind my head that could have happened. And I think it took like a few years. I think 3 to 4 years down, and whereby I started to ask my parents to like come and see me for training or anything that they want to do to improve their health and fitness, right? And eventually, I think was recently, like I said, 3 to 4 years down in, which is during the start of the pandemic, when it's COVID that started. And my parents decided to just do one or two sessions to just start the whole process to train a little bit at home, because we're all at home. And they, after the first few times, they find, okay, it's quite valuable. And they started to understand the whole thing of like, okay, I have to actually exercise for health sake. Because as you age, right, you atrophy and everything just goes down, right? So we want to actually maintain or improve their the whole fitness level and their aging gracefully.
Yeah.
So that's when they started. And then I think there was once or so because of my mom that has some kind of knee pain or something like that. So she approached me. And then although I didn't ask for any money, right, or stuff that they decided to just give me a small amount. I didn't ask them how much, but they just paid me. So I started to understand that, okay, whatever I'm doing actually to my loved ones around, actually there's value that I'm adding to them. It's just that they probably, like I said earlier, they take it for granted and then they don't see that there's someone there that actually could help. And then what I did next was to actually approach my so-called now my wife's parents as well. And then they saw that there was value as well as whatever I'm doing. At the same time, I had to really like get them to understand that you guys are not young, right? So you definitely have to keep up fitness level and stuff like that, because we want them to be aging gracefully and strong. So I didn't even ask them for pay me anything, but they decided to just pay me every session they come. So yeah, it took like 3-4 years. It's pretty long, but I think it's worth it. At least they start to value the whole like family member is able to do this, and then they should pay us, actually. They should value us. Because at the end of the day, right, they are benefiting themselves, and I'm also benefiting myself, because now I know that we are valued more than what we think we are.
For sure.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I think a lot of trainers are undervalued, man.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Us are very undervalued. And then I think in I don't know whether other countries, but in Singapore, right, there's a lot of like uncertified trainers and stuff like that. Not to say they're bad, but they actually pull down the market a lot, like really a lot.
Exactly.
Like whatever we are charging, right, it's like they are devaluing us, actually, in a sense, because we are bundled together with them. Like we are all trainers or coaches, right?
So exactly.
They will start to compare already. Wow.
Yes.
So expensive. This one so cheap. I go for the cheaper one. The same line, I still get the same thing. But they don't understand the rapport, the communication, the value that we all have. So that's I think that's a little problem in maybe in Singapore itself, that they like to compare a lot.
Yeah. Human nature is universal.
I think it happens more
everywhere. I'm telling you, so much of mediocrity in this industry, that the elite ones will also be seen, unless they take a session of yours or your service, they will think, what's the difference?
Yeah, that's true. It happens a lot.
That is why I think social media comes in handy. So that before, if not for social media, it would have been very hard, because they already have a platform to see, okay, this guy knows this. Like this guy has shown results. This guy is posting things which I can relate to. Oh, knee hyperextension. Okay, lower back arching, anterior pelvic orientation and everything related to that pelvic floor. This guy knows his shit. Like, okay. But that trainer that didn't tell me all this stuff. Now I slowly understand what is the difference. So that is where thanks to social media.
Everyone have to leverage on social media for sure.
Tell me about your story. The trust building with your near and dear ones, that you know your stuff. First of all, congratulations. You uploaded a video of your mom doing workout in the gym. Huge achievement. I probably won't be able to do it in this lifetime. I'm telling you, I won't be able to do this in this lifetime. Yeah. Not even in the house, let alone the gym.
Yeah. Actually, both my mom and my sister trains with me.
Your future mother-in-law also.
Oh, yeah, my future mother-in-law.
Like all the ladies, all the ladies are working hard. What about the gents?
Yeah. No time.
Gents have no time.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think it has go both ways. Back when I was a younger trainer, I believe that, you know, I can help my family, you know. So somehow I probably become a bit pushy and impatient with them.
Hmm.
In fact, actually, when I recall, as you asked me that question, actually, I did recall there are actually a few times whereby they asked me, well, why is my knee pain? Or why is my foot pain? Why is my shoulder pain? But I think I got a bit impatient with them. Right now, it's not your knee pain. It's not your knee issue. It's not your shoulder issue. It's none of that issue. You know, let's check. So, I went straight into trying to find a root cause without addressing acknowledging the challenge at face, which means I've skipped a rapport stage. Now, when I look back, actually, we still need to build a rapport or connection, because it's a different setting right now. Right? They're asking for my professional advice. And I think I should also create a rapport. I'm now not your son. I'm just a person who can give you a professional advice. That was how it happened the first few years. I was a bit impatient. I think probably that's the reason why they didn't want to train with me. I think fast forward, I think again, COVID actually changed a lot of things. So how it happened, how did I get my sister to start was she was into pole dancing. And she experienced certain lower back pain or shoulder pain. Yep. So I said, why not just drop by the gym and then we just get it sorted and then see how you can include some strength training into your routine. And that's how it got started. So again, I'm listening to her, see what I can help her with as a coach, not as a brother, as a coach. And then build connection from there. So it's actually the same thing with any clients. Just that I think we had a different lens or I had a different lens or filter to see them. And somehow because of that, they also see me not as a trainer or a coach, they see me as a son or a brother. So the expectations between both parties change. So how I got my mom is, you know, my mom changed her job and she has more time to spare. I said, you know, when was the last time? I was just curious, when was the last time, you know, you got into some exercise? You know, how about, you know, just since you have time, just train with me for a while, you know. So again, that curiosity got her to come to the gym, train once a week. Yeah. So if I were to look back, the way I do things then and now, I think the only difference is I don't skip the rapport building step. I don't skip the connection step.
Yeah. That's a very good one. Like someone asks, okay, I did this drill. I felt good, but I think I have some issue there. I have some issue here. If you straight jump onto, okay, let's check internal rotation. Let's check external rotation.
Yeah.
Then
they wouldn't know what you're doing. Yeah, they will be confused. So the thing is because back then when I tried all this, actually the thing that I did is the same. We were the same. Just that because I skipped, I didn't listen to them, I just jumped straight into testing their range of motion. They get confused. Why are we doing all this? Right? I didn't explain enough. I didn't I didn't say their language. Right? And that's the reason why I think there's some resistance.
True. Yeah, it's same for me. I've learned this. So if a person says this, I will be like, okay, how is it stopping you in your life? Like, what are the issues that have been created due to this pain in your life? How do you feel? Like, have you improved from that day to this day? Are there small wins throughout the journey?
Yeah.
All those, when you are interested in the person gets interested in you.
Yeah. That's right.
That is why this podcast, like I could bring on Sam and discuss like patterns and sacrum and why.
And the thing is, you know, on IG, Facebook, social media, they have, you know, how you treat or how you fix certain thing, but without a connection, people will understand why you do this. You know? So I think one thing that I learned from David Gray, you know, when I was attending his IKN in Australia, he said the treatment starts when the person walks into the room. It already started when you start to ask questions and be curious about the person.
True.
If this person don't buy in, don't feel the connection, they will tense up while you're doing the range of motion. They will tense up when you are doing the drills. So it will not stick as, or it will not work as well as you want to.
I think Sean had told me regarding Dr. Seth Oberst. He's an amazing guy. So he also talks about when the client comes in, like intricate details, how the lighting should be, like where should the things be placed in the room, how much the temperature should be, how much if you're a manual guy, if you touch that person, how should the touch feel? Some touch can be like, I don't want to be touched by this guy. And some touches are okay. Body calms down because someone else's hand is on my body. Sometimes it can be very threatening, and sometimes it can be very relaxing. All this minute details, like where do you sit? Left side of that person or the right side of that person? What is the distance? Everything. You don't want to be too far away. You don't want to be too close. So, like, wow. These are different level stuff, man. Only biomechanics. Nah. Only biomechanics isn't enough. Like, all this stuff. How to make a person feel confident in themselves and in the environment that they've come in. Once they feel that, this person is going to help me. This person is on my side. And so now it's the rapid fire round or the fractal fire. Yes. Starting with we. So okay. Sam, you can think of the answers, but it's okay.
Will it always be me first?
With you first, all the questions.
Always. Oh my. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. So, one skill that you need to improve on in personal as well as professional life.
Fearless. Being fearless.
In both personal and professional.
Personal and professional. Okay. Professional, fearless. Personal, I gotta listen more.
Good. Okay. And talk more as well.
No, talk less, actually. talk less.
Okay. One book, one movie, one person, the most influential from each category in your life.
One book. All right. So many books. I forgot the name. It's by Benjamin Hardy. It's something along personality.
Okay.
Personality can change, something along this line.
Oh.
One person, is it?
Yeah.
One person. Yeah, I would say my girlfriend, Joey. She changed me a lot. What the last one? Sorry.
And one movie.
One movie.
Very influential.
Man. Very influential. I would say Star Wars. I only recently watched Star Wars. Yeah, but Star Wars is pretty good. Yeah.
One incident in your life which changed your entire perspective of looking at life.
One incident.
Yeah.
Oh my. It's very tough.
Sam is preparing answers.
Okay. So I would say is I think a couple of years back, you know, something happened between Joey and I. Hmm. And then, but that incident, I don't want to go too in depth, but that incident changed my perspective because if I were to, I can either hate her or forgive her and love her. I chose to forgive and love her because I know that if I hate her, my life and her life will just totally change 180 degrees that night. But because of I chose to forgive and love, we managed to work things out together.
Your biggest fear?
My biggest fear is trying to show trying to only show the good side about me on social media.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Your most prized possession?
Biceps.
Most prized possession.
Yeah.
Can I say Joey? I mean, she's priceless.
I understand.
Yeah.
Your definition of success and happiness?
My success is when I help people to succeed. My success is giving more, able to give more, and people able to, because of what I give them, they're able to achieve more than what they can do. Mainly in fitness and health and fitness realm. Happiness to me is a very, It's a feeling, it's a moment. So happiness, I think, it's not something that I can attain, but it's a momentarily kind of thing. Without much expectations, making space for happiness, understanding that there are other emotions playing together as an orchestra. So to me, happiness is just one little thing that comes and goes.
Describe life in one word.
Adventure.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Now coming to Sam.
Yeah.
One skill that you need to improve on, personal as well as professional life.
One skill, right? I thought of it, but I forgot.
So he was preparing. Now I forgot.
I was preparing, what was it just now? So one, I think it will be self-confidence for both. Definitely need to work on more self-confidence because sometimes I think everyone will have a little confidence issue sometimes, like we don't dare to do that. And then I just need to improve on that and just think more that I'm actually able to do it. Self-confidence, yeah.
Don't worry, you join my mentorship program, you gain self-confidence.
Okay.
I make you confident. When I come to Singapore, sure. When I come to Singapore, you sit with me, near me, you gain confidence.
Okay. Looking forward.
Yeah. So, one book, one movie, one person. Most influential.
One book. Think Again by Adam.
What is that book about?
About rethinking. You have to rethink in order to improve yourself. It's a quite a new book, and I think that was the one that caught my attention this year that I just read it. Movie, right? The next one. Marvel Endgame.
Mm.
Yeah. The Iron Man part. La. And then
person.
What's the a person? Amanda, my wife. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Lovely. All dedicated would be husbands, yeah, boyfriends. Yeah, good. Sam and V. Nice. One incident that changed everything, like the way you look at things and in life.
I think it was to treasure the time you have with your loved ones because anything can happen. So that was the incident where my dad was involved in the motorbike accident. Yeah. Mm. So it was quite a serious one. Yeah.
Biggest fear.
Wow. My biggest fear is that not knowing actually what is going to happen next. Mm. So we are always on our toes trying to move forward in the unknown. The world can be, the world is actually a dark place. You just got to try to look for the right path that you're walking in. Yeah, so my biggest fear is that not knowing what's going to happen next.
I thought he would say not understanding tertiary courses of PRI.
Oh, no. That one. Maybe that'll be the second one.
Most prized possession.
Keep learning. So I would say the computer. Yeah, you just keep learning.
Yeah,
the computer. You just need your laptop, man.
Yeah, for sure. Definition of success, happiness.
Definition of success and happiness. So success, I can put it together actually. Success and happiness can be together. So I think it'll be more like a well balanced between your personal life and your career, and then how can this actually intertwine together and bring you satisfaction for both sides of things and become as one. So you can become both actually. You can be successful and happy at the same time. So I think it's possible.
Describe life in one word.
What comes to mind straight away? Well, life in one word, be thankful. Thankful. Because you never know what's going to happen next.
Okay.
So be thankful for every second you're on this earth. And thankful for like every day you're able to get into a new day and start the day again.
Yes. True.
Yeah, be thankful.
So that's the end of the rapid fire round. And before I let you go, I have the final two questions for you. So starting with V. What advice would you give to someone like me? So as an industry senior, what advice would you give to someone like me?
One piece of advice. Yeah, is I think always be open to learn. Yeah. Because even to with juniors, I always learn something from you whenever I talk.
Thanks,
you can man. Always you can always learn something from anyone as long as you're open.
For sure. Like no ego that okay, I'm this many years of experience under my belt. Someone with less experience, I'm not going to learn from him. So you don't have that. And that's the best thing. So that like I can learn from someone who has just started. You can learn from someone who has just started.
Yeah.
Like we can all learn something or the other from someone. So Justin Moore says this very well. So when we chat, he says everyone has something to offer. If someone does not have knowledge, you know, this guy is not knowledgeable, but has a lot of clients. Learn marketing, learn strategy, strategizing your business from that person.
Yeah.
Don't take his knowledge advice. So Sam, what would you advise? I want to be as talented as you. That's a different thing, but.
You're equally talented or maybe more, man. Okay. So, be in a room with the smartest people. So be the dumbest person in the room. So mix yourself with the smartest people. Because if you're in a room with the if you're in a room and you're the smartest, there's nothing else to learn. So this is similar to what Viho said, but just be in a room with the smartest people.
I add something else, something more with it. Is that be the dumbest person in the room without inferiority complex. If you have inferiority complex, you won't be able to learn. You'll always be, oh, I'm so uneducated.
Yeah.
Dumbest person with curiosity.
Exactly. That's a good one.
Yeah.
And Sam, the second question is, what are the major life learnings till date for you? And how do you intend to move on from here?
Major life learnings. So what a few major life learnings experience was that my dad's accident. So this allows me to treasure the loved ones more because time really is so short for everybody. So we have to make sure that we don't neglect, we just do our, be well and away in our career. But actually what is around us is going to be as important or even more important. Because at the end of the day, right, you can easily earn money, but you cannot get new loved ones again. They're just once in your lifetime. Yeah. And then so moving forward, definitely to put more emphasis into family. Have more talking time with my parents and my dad. Not just once a week, maybe every day, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I think that's the one thing that moving forward that I will want to work on more because really time is short, man.
Very short, very short.
Yeah, even if the pandemic, right? So many people just like, it's like every day, so many people pass away.
Yeah.
It could be many people's loved ones as well. Yeah.
And we?
You know, as I learn more and more, I start to see there's a lot of parallels with movement and life. Meaning, just like movement, you know, you don't want to get too far on one extreme or spectrum. You want to be able to go in and out or left and right of the spectrum. Just like in life, you know, you do just because. How do I put it? People are adaptable, right? You want to be staying adaptable, and instead of just knowing that, okay, just because people told me I'm a so-called emotional person doesn't mean that I can't change. You are able to change. Yeah. If there's a will, there's a way. Yeah. So this is the parallel that I see people. The second thing that I realize is be interested rather than be interesting. That's how you build connection. with people. The third one, it will be more expressive. Give yourself permission to be vulnerable, of course, to people who you trust. Because as you know, all this mental wellness thing keep coming up, but people are just talking about it, but they don't know how to deal with it. Yeah. I don't think it's just an Asian culture whereby people don't express. I think it's worldwide. So find someone who you trust and be vulnerable and just express yourself. Of course, there's a fine line between being vulnerable and expressive and just complaining and get stuck in that situation. Yeah, I mean, that's a difference.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? Yeah, I think we thrive in a community. I think rather than divide, you know, we can see how can we work things together so that, you know, we can move this industry forward as well.
Sure.
I mean, there's a few more, but I just don't want to take up too much of the time. Yeah, but I think these are the 3 to 4 main things that I've realized over the years.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And where there is a will, there is a way. Like, fantastic line there, yeah. Mahatma Gandhi. And that is actually true. You will find a way if you have the will to do that.
Yeah. And not knowing that, I think we are human beings, we are adaptable.
Yes.
Meaning, personality can change. The way you see, how you see yourself, what's your perspective, can also alter your behavior as well. So we are never fixed. We are never fixed personality. Yeah.
Prime example. I'm not the same I was a decade ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, correct.
Shy, introvert, and inferiority complex. And now you know, so.
If there's one thing that I don't believe is shy about you, you are not shy. The thing is, you're not shy.
Changed.
But I believe you can still be shy, yet courageous at the same time.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be either or all.
Yeah.
You can
shifted
be...
from this spectrum to slightly this spectrum.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So again, spectrum. I think one of the things that I also learned is you can still be fearful yet courageous at the same time. It's not courage is not in the absence of fear. I think Susan David said it very nice, is courage is fear walking. Yeah. Mm. So you can still be fearful and yet courageous. Just like what you said, you can still be shy and yet curious and try things.
That was an amazing episode. Yeah. Loved chatting with you guys after a long time. And
Singapore.
In person, right?
In person. In person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as we, Sam, and I did. I thank you for your time. Feel free to reach out to all of us on Instagram. Our profile IDs are shared in the episode description. See you later and have a great day.